This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning, live in studio. Thank you for being with us. A little wet out there today. Take care. Let's go ahead and start out with our weekly wrap for this week. A little bit of a rough week out there. The market started the second quarter with a volatile price action following a very strong start of the year. Ultimately, the major indices settled with decent losses. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 2.3% for the week. Russell 2000 down 2.9%. Each fell more than 2%, and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composites declined 1% and 0.8%, respectively. The downside bias was related to a sharp increase in market rates amid some solid economic data and sticky inflation figures. The 10-year note yield jumped 12 basis points to 4.33%. The 2-year note yield rose 10 basis points to 4.72%. The February Personal Spending and Income Report, which was released last Friday when markets were closed, showed some sticky inflation figures in the form of PCE price indexes. Some of the week's data included the March ISM Manufacturing Index and the March Employment Report, reflected ongoing strength in the economy. The March ISM Non-Manufacturing PMI and Weekly Jobless Claims Report also showed some softening, though. Market participants were recalibrating their rate cut expectations following this week's data and some commentary from Fed officials. Minneapolis Fed President Kash Kari, who was not an FOMC voter this year, was among the Fed officials to draw attention, saying it's possible that the Fed might not cut rates this year if progress on inflation stalls. The implied likelihood of a rate cut in June is now essentially a toss-up, having fallen to just 52.4% from 60.4% a week ago. Increased geopolitical tensions in the Middle East related to potential retaliation by Iran against Israel also contributed to the negative bias this week, in addition to some normal consolidation efforts after the strong start of the year. Just about everything participated in this week's losses. 9 of the 11 S&P 500 sectors finished lower. Healthcare was down 3.1%, and that saw the steepest decline. The real estate sector was down 3%. Consumer staples were down 2.7%, were also notable laggards. Meanwhile, we saw energy up 3.9% and communication services up 2.5%. Those were the sectors alone with gains at the end of the week. So looking at some of our daily summaries, we saw that Monday's session featured a mostly negative bias. It was the first trading day of the new quarter following a stellar start of the year for many stocks, which contributed to the overall negative vibe. Declining issues outpaced advancing issues by a roughly 2-to-1 margin on both the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. The Russell 2000, which outperformed other major indices last week, dropped 1%. The S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Averages fell 0.2% and 0.6%, respectively. The NASDAQ Composite, meanwhile, shed a tenth, eked out a 0.1% gain, thanks to gains among some mega caps and relative strength in the semiconductor space. The semiconductor index actually jumped 1.2%. The downward pressure seen elsewhere in the stock market was in response to a sharp increase in market rates. Treasuries were reacting to some economic data that didn't exactly cooperate the market's thinking in terms of rate cuts by the Federal Reserve. Reviewing Monday's economic data, we saw the S&P 500 Global U.S. Manufacturing Index drop to 51.9 in the final reading for March from 52.2 a month ago, and the March ISM Manufacturing Index checked in at 50.3. That was up, however, from 47.8 in February. That is the first reading above 50 since September of 22, which equates to a manufacturing sector operating in an expansion mode. And the key takeaway from this report is that it contained all the reasons why the Fed believes it can be patient before cutting rates. Business activity is expanding, prices are sticking at higher levels, and the employment conditions remain reasonably good. Total construction spending actually decreased 0.3% month over month in February, following an unrealized 0.2% decline in January. Total private construction was the first month over month when total public construction was down 1.2% month over month. On a year-over-year basis, total construction spending is actually up 10.7%. The key takeaway from this report is that new single-family construction remains an important prop for overall construction spending, but the pickup there in February was not enough to offset the decent-sized decline in non-residential spending in both private and public sectors. Tuesday, the market had a weak showing. The S&P 500 was down 0.7, the Dow was down 1, the Russell down 1.8. They extended the week's loss while the NASDAQ Composite gave back Monday's modest gain and then some, sliding 1%. The major indices closed off their session lows thanks to some afternoon improvement with no specific catalyst. Tuesday's selling was driven by normal consolidation activity following a strong start to the year for many stocks. Another jump in market rates as participants continued to rethink rate cuts amid solid economic data and sticky inflation figures also played an integral part in Tuesday's trade. We saw outsized losses in health insurers also contributed to the negative bias. The Center for Medical Medicare Services basically left its original proposed payment rate increase in Medicare Advantage plans for 24 and 25 unchanged at 3.7%. That caused a big sell-off in healthcare stocks, which were expecting that that rate of reimbursement would have been higher. Retailers were another weak area of the market. They followed disappointing quarterly results from PVH Corporation that stirred some uncertainty about consumer spending activity. So reviewing Tuesday's economic data, we saw the February factory orders were up 1.4%. The key takeaway from this report is that there's a pickup in new orders in February for durable and non-durable goods, demonstrating that there has been a lingering drop-off in demand. And Wednesday's trade featured mostly positive price action. After a soft start of the day, buying activity picked up at 10 a.m. Eastern Time after the release of softer-than-expected ISM Services PMI for March. The positive bias is also supported by buy-the-dip mentality following a weak start in the week. The recent negative price action was in response to a jump in market rates as participants had recalibrated rate cut expectations and ongoing strength in the economic data and sticky inflation numbers. Treasuries also reacted favorably to Wednesday's morning soft data, though which was also contributed to this upside bias. We saw some relative strength in the semiconductor space, which also contributed to that positive. In Wednesday's economic data, we saw the weekly MBA mortgage applications were down 0.6%. ADP's employment change was 184,000. We saw March's S&P Global U.S. Services PMI come in a final at 51.7. We saw the ISM non-manufacturing PMI come in at 51.4. And the key takeaway from this report is the recognition that the expansion in the services sector, which is the largest swath of the U.S. economy, slowed in March, substantiated by a slowdown in the pace of increases in prices and in new orders. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up. We'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
They said it couldn't be done. They said it was impossible. But mark my words, I did it with Kohl's. That's right, I got everything I needed for my spring home refresh in one trip. I'm talking Sonoma Goods for Life bedding for 20% off, an Espresso Virtual Plus Deluxe for 30% off, Cuisinart cookware sets for 35% off, and Sonoma Goods for Life decor for 20% off. So if you want to get set for the season and save big, you can do it all at Kohl's. Select styles, some exclusions apply. Espresso and Cuisinart coupons do not apply. See store or kohls.com for details.
Are you looking for an auto shop that offers honest quality service? Hi, I'm Kirk, owner of Angler Automotive. At Angler Automotive, we strive to make sure that all of your automotive service needs are met. Angler Automotive provides the factory recommended services that are required to maintain your vehicle's warranty. Angler Automotive, outstanding quality with honest, reliable service. Check us out online at anglerautomotive.com.
The incredible stories of patients who have had nurses and doctors visit them, only to find out that those people never existed.
Coast to coast.
A physician who died of a cardiac arrest in the hospital. But one of the nurses was on vacation and came back a couple of weeks later, got onto the elevator, and there is the doctor that died.
Every night at 10 p.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. As always, we're thankful that you're listening to us. And if you got questions for us, you can always give us a call. We are Asset Advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway, out in the Pacific Commerce Center next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Also, I do have some Mariners tickets available for the next homestand. I didn't happen to bring my schedule with me to let you know which games there are, but I know that there's some tickets that are available during that homestand. So if you're interested in 4 tickets and a parking pass, I'd be glad to share them with you. You can give us a call, 360-733-1200. Also, if we are in a situation, we've done a fairly major remodel in our office, and we are looking to add an advisor associate with us, as well as operations staff. So if somebody out there is in the industry and looking to maybe make a change or come join us, we'd love to talk to them. Again, 360-733-1200. Well, let's continue on with this week's market summary. And on Thursday, the market started the day in a rally mode, but it finished with sharp losses. Some of the participants pointed to comments from the Minneapolis Fed president, which I mentioned earlier, who said that it is possible that the Fed might not cut rates this year. But others indicated increased geopolitical tensions in the Middle East related to potential retaliation by Iran against Israel as the key factor driving the afternoon sell-off. The latter concern also drove afternoon gains in oil prices and defense-related stocks. The West Texas Intermediate crude oil futures climbed 1.3% to $86.57 a barrel. Lockheed Martin and RTX, which were winning standouts from the defense space. There is an overall lingering sense among some participants that stocks are due for a more meaningful pullback after the stellar start of the year, which also contributed to the afternoon retreat. So reviewing Thursday's economic data, initial jobless claims for the week ending March 30th increased by 9,000 to 221,000. Continuing claims decreased, however, by 19,000 to 1.791 million. The key takeaway from this report is the element of softening seen in the initial claims number. However, initial claims continue to run below levels associated with a truly weak labor market and a contracting economy. The trade deficit in February also widened to $68.9 billion. That was from a downward revised $67.6 billion in January. The widening was a result of exports being $5.8 billion more than January exports and imports being $7.1 billion more than January imports. The key takeaway from this report, though, is that both exports and imports increased in February, reflecting a pickup in global trade. We also saw the weekly EIA natural gas inventories showed a draw of 37 billion feet versus a draw of 36 billion this last week. On Friday, the market closed the week on a positive note. The upside moves were supported by the dip mentality from a volatile start of the second quarter. The positive bias is also in response to Friday morning's release of the March employment reports reflected ongoing strength in the labor market. The takeaway is that a strong labor market seemingly bodes well for corporate earnings and outlook. Gains were broad-based, but moves in the mega caps and the semiconductor stocks had an outsized impact on the index performance. So reviewing Friday's economic data, we saw the headlines for the March employment report were all good economically speaking. Non-farm payrolls were increased by 303,000. The unemployment rate dropped to 3.8%. Average hourly earnings were up 0.3%, and the average work week increased to 34.4 hours. The key takeaway from this report is that continued to support a solid earnings growth outlook, even if it did not necessarily support the outlook for the Fed to cut rates anytime soon. So as of yesterday, year-to-date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is now up 3.2%. The NASDAQ is up 8.2%, the S&P 500 is up 9.1%, and the Russell 2000 Index is up 1.8%. Well, we'd like to do our focus report every week, and this week we are going to take a look at the S&P 500 Index over the first quarter of this year. It's widely regarded as the barometer of the overall stock market. The S&P 500 Index tracks the performance of the 500 largest companies listed on the U.S. stock exchanges. The S&P 500 adjusts a market cap weighting approach, allocating a higher percentage of the index to companies with larger market capitalizations, and they're adjusted for the number of shares available and publicly traded. In the first quarter, the S&P 500 Index delivered total return of 10.6%. That's its 11th best start in history. The S&P 500 Index hit an all-time high 22 times over that period, with only 1.7% maximum drawdown over the quarter. A very exceptional quarter indeed. Here are three of the insights that can offer deeper understanding into the events that unfolded during this extraordinary quarter. First of all, let's take a look at the S&P 500 attribution numbers. And what we're finding is that the Magnificent Seven companies, which is Apple, Nvidia, Microsoft, Amazon, Tesla, Alphabet, and Meta, were currently the boost and estimated combined 28.7% of the S&P 500 index. In other words, those seven companies make up almost 29% of the total index. They accounted for 60.2% of the 26.3% total return in the market last year. So far in 2024, at the end of the first quarter, the Magnificent Seven accounted for about 36.4% of the 10.6% return. Nvidia stood out with an impressive 82% increase, leading the pack in terms of contribution. However, not all the members of this group saw positive growth. Apple and Tesla experienced declines of 11% and 29% respectively, including detracting 1.26% from the market's overall performance. Tesla's downturn was particularly notable, making it the most poorest performer in the S&P 500 index and causing it to slip for the ninth position by market capitalization. It was replaced by Berkshire Hathaway in the seventh slot. If Berkshire Hathaway replaced Tesla in the Magnificent Seven, the new Mag 7 contribution to the overall market return increases to 44%. Let's also take a look at the percentage of the S&P 500 members that are outperforming the index. And in 2023, the market advances were concentrated with a mere 27% of the firms within the S&P 500 index surpassing the index's performance. What I just said is only 27% of those 500 companies beat the overall index. The first quarter of 24, however, marked a shift towards a more inclusive rally, with 40% of the companies in the index outpacing the overall index. This indicates a trend toward more widespread market returns, a welcome improvement from the previous year's narrow gains. Despite the positive change, the proportion of companies outperforming the index remains below the 29-year average of 48%. Let's also take a look at the forward P.E. for S&P 500 index if we segment based on 2024 earnings. And the S&P 500 total return surged 10.6% in the first quarter, but earnings were not expected to grow as quickly. This has led to an increase in the price-to-earnings multiple, or P.E. ratio, of the S&P 500 index, which has expanded to 22.4 at the end of March from 20.2 at the start of the year. The expansion this year can be somewhat attributed to the extraordinary price performance of the Magnificent Seven. Their P.E. has experienced a surge from 30.8% at the beginning of the year to 33.5% at the end of March. But the P.E. and the other 493 companies also moved higher from 17.8 to 19.7. So a little look at the depth of the movement in the S&P 500 index. We'll be right back.
The Lummi Bay Market at Exit 260 is where you'll find more in the store. You'll find more in the store because there's so much store. Almost 10,000 square feet. The Lummi Bay Market is where you'll find everything you need for on and off the road. You'll find the best value on gas and diesel, along with way more than you would expect out of a convenience store. There's a liquor department featuring a great selection of your favorite competitively priced spirits, wines, and mixers. And of course, you'll want to check out the huge selection of ice cold beer in their massive beer cave. Want to grab a quick bite for breakfast or lunch? Don't feel like cooking dinner? At the Lummi Bay Market, you'll find a great hot deli counter, including our brand new fried chicken tenders, and chicken wings with all the fix-ins. Make the Lummi Bay Market your first or last stop of the day for fuel, food, and more. The Lummi Bay Market, just off I-5 at Exit 260 on Rural Avenue. Open 24 hours, 7 days a week. Lummi Bay Market, where there's more in the store.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
The average family throws out $1,500 of food every year. That's a lot. Imagine what you could do with extra cash. There are simple ways to reduce your food waste and increase your savings. It starts with a meal plan, a menu, a shopping list, and ends with a little creativity, fresh recipes, ingredient swaps, and new kitchen skills. Get tips to reduce food waste and make your dollar go further. Know the cost. Go to usefoodwell.org to learn more.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham.
Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Make sure you protect your eyes with special eclipse glasses if you plan on watching the event Monday. Time magazine editor Jeffrey Kluger.
Keep those glasses on. Looking at a bit of the sun peeking out from behind the moon is as dangerous as looking at the sun directly when it's fully exposed.
You need to be prepared for aftershocks. That's the warning going out to those on the East Coast who felt yesterday's 4.8 magnitude quake. CBS's Errol Barnett.
Those aftershocks, while not causing any widespread destruction, can be damaging on the small scale. And this is the most densely populated part of the country.
Iran is vowing to retaliate for an airstrike in Syria. CBS's David Martin.
U.S. officials tell CBS News Iran is making preparations to launch a swarm of drones and missiles timed around the upcoming end of Ramadan.
Two top generals were among those killed in the attack. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Well, we're sitting here talking about different things. We talked a little bit about what the S&P 500, how it performed, what pieces of it performed this last month or first quarter of the year. And, of course, we've been talking about this a little bit, but let's spend a little bit more time talking about the U.S. debt dilemma. Basically, the path of the U.S. government finance is going to be a cause for concern. We're seeing interest expense is projected to hit record levels as deficit spending continues. So what might be the implications for investors going forward? Well, the Congressional Budget Office projects that the U.S. federal budget deficit is going to reach approximately $1.6 trillion this year. That's nearly 6% of GDP, and that is well above the 4% average over the last 50 years. The high deficit will contribute to an already elevated federal debt balance, which is projected to drive interest expenses to record levels next year and beyond. The federal interest expense is projected to exceed $950 billion next year. That means they're going to be spending over $950 billion on interest. That's reaching a record of 3.2% of the gross domestic product. And alarmingly, interest expense is also projected to climb steadily to 6.5% of GDP. That's over double by 2054, 30 years from now. At that point, it would surpass total federal discretionary spending and even exceed Social Security outlays. In our view, this is an unsustainable path. Ultimately, deficits will have to come down in order to help curb debt and interest expense growth. Whether this reduction occurs through higher taxes, lower spending, or both, we believe investors should be prepared for a less favorable fiscal environment in the future. Despite these challenges, we remind investors that the U.S. remains central to the global economy, hosting many of the world's most innovative companies. Such companies may be particularly sought after for their ability to grow in the face of potential future fiscal headwinds. So we're going to have to keep an eye on that one. And we also look every quarter at their top three S&P 500 sectors, and looking back at what happened here in the first quarter of this year. And one of the most common questions that we field on an ongoing basis is, what are our favorite sectors? Sometimes the answer is more evident than at other times, and sometimes it only makes sense via hindsight. Only two sectors of the S&P 500 index have been the top performing in back-to-back calendar years since 2005. Information technology was the first, posting higher returns in 2019 when it was up 50.29% and 2020 when it was up 43.89%. Energy was the second posting the highest return. In 2021, it was up 54.9%. In 2022, it was up 65.43%, according to data from Bloomberg. The top-performing sectors and their total returns in the first quarter of 2024 were as follows. Communication services were up 15.82%. Energy up 13.69%. Technology up 12.69%. The total return for the S&P 500 index was 10.5% over this same period. The other eight sectors operated total returns ranging from 12.45% for financials to minus 0.55% for real estate. By comparison, the top-performing sectors in their total return in the first quarter of 23, in other words, a year ago, technology up 21.82%, communication services are up 20.5%, Consumer discretionary was up 16.05, and the worst performing sectors a year ago were healthcare down 4.31%, energy down 4.71%, and financials were down 5.56%. Advancements in artificial intelligence, or AI, continue to be a catalyst for the S&P 500 communication services and information technology indexes this year. At 49.76% and 46.01%, respectively, the trailing 12-month total returns for the communication services and information technology indices were the highest for the 11 sectors that comprise the S&P 500 index through the end of March of this year. For comparison, the total return of the S&P 500 index was 29.86 over that same period. Each of these 11 major sectors that comprise the S&P 500 were positive in their total return also over that same period of time. So what is our takeaway from all this? Well, the top performing sector often varies from quarter to quarter. Of the 11 sectors that make up the S&P 500 index, communication services and information technology index boosts the highest total returns on a trailing 12-month basis, up 49.76 and 46.01% respectively. For even so, they have only claimed the top spot in two of the last four quarters. That said, developments in AI continue to bolster revenue expectations for these companies. On March 29th, data from Bloomberg revealed that revenues for the companies that comprise the S&P 500 technology and communication services indices were forecast to grow at 9.39% and 7.32% respectively in 2024. The figures represent the highest year-over-year revenue growth estimate of the 11 sectors that comprise the S&P 500 index. And revenue growth estimates for the S&P 500 healthcare sector index came in third at 6.64%, while a different sector was rose to the top in the second quarter of 24. We look forward to seeing what that data shows. So we've seen the market rotate, does that. Just, you know, one sector, then the other. Let's also take a look at what's happening with gold and silver and with the miners right now, because we're seeing some movement in that area as well. And there are some disparities that often exist between the annual price performance of an ounce of gold, bullion, silver, and equity returns posted for mining companies. Precious metals have historically been considered potential inflation hedges by investors. From 2026 through 2023, the 12-month return change in the consumer price index was to average 3%, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It stood at 3.2% at the end of February of this year. That's down from its most recent record high of 9.1% set in June of 22, but up from its most recent low of 3% in June of 23. The price of gold has been trending upward. The spot price of 1 ounce of gold stood at a record high of $2,261 on April 2nd. That was an increase of 9.13% on year-over-year date basis, according to data from Bloomberg. The spot price after has also increased over this same time frame. The spot price on 1 ounce of silver rose 9.86% on a year-to-date basis as of April 2nd. That said, unlike gold, the spot price for silver is not recovered to its all-time high. That price of 1 ounce of silver stood at $26.14 back in April 2nd of this year. It's 47.14% below its all-time high of $49.45 an ounce set back in January 18th of 1980. that was, you may remember, there was a little run-up in silver because of one particular family that was pushing it back in those days, if you happen to have 43 years of memory. I do. In 2023, the spot price of the U.S. dollar index peaked at $107. April 3rd of 2023, before falling to $100.99 on December 27th of last year. Since then, the index has increased 3.79%. The dollar index is now at 104.82 as of April 2nd. Through the from 2009 to 2023, the Philadelphia Stock Exchange Gold and Silver Index posted a positive total return in 7 of the last 15 years. 5 of them occurred between 2016 and 2023, and it's also positive this year. So what's the takeaway that we have on what's happening here? Well, it's basically, it's defied our expectations. If the CPI is down 5.9 percentage points from its most recent high, then why is gold is getting also setting record highs? Silver is rebounding, and the U.S. dollar is closing in on its 2023 calendar year high. Well, from our perspective, there are several catalysts in play. That first, many investors view the U.S. dollar, gold, silver, and other precious metals as safe havens during times of turmoil. The war between Russia and Ukraine, the Hamas-Israel, as well as the terrorist attacks in the Red Sea, posed geopolitical risks that may be leading investors to seek refuge in these assets. Additionally, despite recent disinflation, the CPI remains well above its Federal Reserve targets, which is 2%, and increasing 3.1% January of 24, 3.2% in February. Other inflation metrics reveal a similar trend. The Fed's core, my lights here is not real good. The Fed's core inflation, food and energy, and super core services, which is only no goods excluding food, energy, and housing, inflation metrics rose by 2.8% and 3.3% on a year-over-year basis in February of this year. Should not, geopolitical risk and inflation remain elevated or worsen, then we do expect higher valuations will occur since these are safe on these safe haven assets. So a little thought on what's happening with gold and silver. We'll be right back.
If you're ready to jumpstart that kitchen remodel, upgrade your barbecue, or start sleeping better on a new bed, DeWarden Bodie is ready to help with their spring clearance on home appliances, barbecues, and mattresses. They've got some unbelievable offers for you this weekend. I'm talking savings up to 50% off retail prices you'll see at other stores on floor models and blemished items. They've got one-of-a-kind deals on closeout Weber barbecues, Traeger smokers, and Gosney pizza ovens, plus deep discounts on a huge selection of major home appliances. This spring, refresh and renew your sleep with a new mattress so you can wake up feeling ready to tackle your spring cleaning. With more than 40 mattresses on display at their Bellingham showroom, they'll help you find the perfect fit at the perfect price. Plus, get your new mattress delivered and set up for free on qualifying purchases. And start sleeping better tonight with no money down and no interest for up to 5 years. But hurry in. One-only spring clearance deals are only available while supplies last at DeWarden Bodie in Bellingham and Burlington.
We hear a lot about high interest rates these days, but if you're interested in a more comfortable home and don't want to pay any interest, West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical should get your interest. Hi, I'm Joe Tien. Let me explain. Warm weather is right around the corner, and if you've been thinking about adding air conditioning to your home, now is the time to act. If you don't have AC and your current system is on its last legs, you can save $3,600 on a new system right now. If you're happy with your current system and you just want to add AC, West Mechanical's pros can get you up and running for as little as $140 per month. A great price for the ultimate in comfort. And they offer 0% interest. That's right, 0% interest, and always with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And don't forget about a system tune-up. Experts now say twice a year is ideal to keep your equipment running right. Get to know West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical today at westmechanical.net. That's westmechanical.net.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Got questions for me? Give me a call. 360-733-1200. Will saw a report out this last week that kind of caught my attention, talking about the higher costs that Americans are facing under the Environmental Protection Agency's electric truck mandate. And basically, one week, the Environmental Protection Agency comes after our gasoline-powered cars. Then, this last week, they came after diesel-powered trucks. They chose Good Friday, when many Americans were preparing to celebrate Easter Sunday, to release a new rule requiring that 25% of truck sales be electric by 2032. Practically everything Americans use comes by truck, either by the way from the producer or from posts or railroad terminals, or from our ports or railroad terminals. That's why, if electric truck and charging technology existed, EPA's new rule would raise costs for everything Americans buy, resulting in higher price of goods and services and inflationary pressures throughout the economy. All this at a time when the Federal Reserve is trying to get inflation down to 2%. But America doesn't have the electric grid capacity, the charging stations, or the technology to operate long-haul electric trucks, and the nation will not have them by 2032. Trucking and utility companies have to invest almost $1 trillion in charging infrastructure before electric trucks can be operational. EPA's goal either will have to be discarded or move steadily into the future. The electric truck rule requires regulations released last month that would require 70% of cars. It follows regulations, I should say, that require 70% of cars and light trucks, such as pickup trucks, to be electric by 2032. Both these rules are going to face court challenges on the grounds that the EPA exceeded its authority. The EPA's stated rationale is to reduce emissions, but electrifying trucks is going to have a minimal impact on global temperatures while raising transportation costs and therefore inflation. The difference in the cost of diesel and electric trucks is monumental, and only a government official with no trucking experience would consider one a substitute for the other. Diesel trucks are the 100, 150, maybe 200,000. An electric truck ranges 450 to 500,000. Trucking companies will have to raise prices to cover these costs. Small trucking companies simply could not afford the higher costs, and they're going to go out of business. And not only that, but a proposed power plant rule from the EPA, soon to be released in final form, is going to make electricity more expensive. This rule, not mentioned in the EPA's vehicle tailpipe regulations, would require power plants to sequester 90% of their carbon emissions by 2039 or close in 2040. And although smaller commercial trucks, including school buses and utility trucks, often travel locally, they can be charged at depots overnight. Heavy-duty trucks transport goods for long distances. These larger electric trucks cannot carry loads as heavy as diesel trucks do because they lose range. So businesses need more trucks to carry a given volume of product, which raises transportation costs. Electric trucks now have a range of 230 to 310 miles. Generally, they must stop and recharge when battery strength falls below 20%. Truckers would have to recharge every 100 to 250 miles, which can take 1 to 2 hours. Long-haul electric trucks also can't travel as many miles in a day because truckers are limited to 11 hours on the road, and recharging time comes out of that. Truckers are already in high demand, with 80,000 estimated job vacancies. Because of growing e-commerce, more trucks are needed rather than fewer. Requiring truckers to stop for 2 hours to recharge is going to reduce earnings and make these jobs less desirable. Some drivers are going to quit. Others would have to be paid more to remain on the job. So EPA's call for costs of truck electrification, billions of dollars worth of investments from trucking fleets, vehicle manufacturers, and U.S. states, as these investments would have to have a positive rate of return, but the cost that would be borne by Americans in the form of higher prices. EPA's massive project to reshape America's transportation system would lower economic growth and increase the budget deficit as manufacturers attempt to comply with regulations and use green tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act to waste resources investing in products that are unsuited for companies' needs. The EPA justifies this regulation on the grounds that America is going to have cleaner air as a result. But electric trucks are not an emissions-free, and they do impose costs on the environment that gasoline-powered cars don't. Electricity for the battery-powered vehicles comes from coal and natural gas, not the renewable energy sources such as solar, wind, and nuclear that are generally fully used for other purposes at the current time. Additional sources of energy to meet the demand for electricity come from fossil fuels and hydropower. So batteries for electric heavy-duty trucks are produced in China. They're using energy from coal-fired power plants. Producing batteries for electric vehicles uses carbon. The long range of the battery, the more the carbon is used. Large electric trucks need two 8,000-pound batteries. Miners have to move more than 500,000 pounds of earth to get enough critical minerals for one 1,000-passenger car battery. According to physicist Mark Mills, the multiple quantities of these minerals will be required for electric trucks. Mining for critical minerals is environmentally disruptive. America outsources the work to Asia, Latin America, and Africa. In 2022, the Supreme Court concluded in West Virginia versus EPA that the EPA had overstepped its authority in its 2015 Clean Power Plan by forcing states to shut down power plants. Chief Justice John Roberts described the plan as a regulatory program that Congress had conspicuously declined to enact itself. Now, in similar sight of him, the Environmental Protection Agency is trying to determine what vehicles are allowed on the road, adopting a program that Congress has not voted into law. EPA wants to require the purchase of electric trucks because companies won't use them otherwise, just as the agency is requiring more passenger vehicles to be electric than Americans want to buy. So it's pure illusion to think that American commerce is going to run on electric trucks. The size and composition of the batteries, the network of charging stations, and the electricity to run those stations makes the whole enterprise a fantasy. Far more people believe that the Easter Bunny than they believe that the EPA is going to succeed in this particular venture. So we'll see. I saw a little report come out this week. I thought I'd spend a moment on here. Ranking of U.S. wealth. Despite concerns over the state of the union ahead of this November's election, U.S. remains the undisputed leader in private wealth creation and accumulation. What they found is that $67 trillion is the liquid investable wealth in the United States, $67 trillion of total liquid assets, and that the U.S. ranks number one globally. They also found that at $201,469, that is the wealth per capita, that the U.S. ranks sixth globally. That's after Monaco, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Australia, and Singapore. And 62% millionaire growth from 2013 to 2023, the U.S. ranks the low 11th globally. That means that with 62% growth in the number of millionaires, we rank number 11 globally. But we also rank number one globally in the fact that we have 5.5 million millionaires in the United States. We have 9,849 centimillionaires. They also rank globally. That means 9,849 people in the country have at least $100 million. And we have 788 billionaires in the United States, which also ranks the United States as number one in the world. And then also we find the same picture here, what's stressing people out. The presidential election, 49% are very concerned, 29% are somewhat concerned. Persistent inflation, 35% are very concerned, 32% are somewhat concerned. The risk of recession, 29% are very concerned, 32% somewhat. Rising interest rates, 27% are very concerned, 29% somewhat. And poor stock market performance, only 20% are concerned, and 37% are somewhat concerned. So just some little interesting numbers that kind of throw out there, get you thinking about what people are thinking about. And I've saw a couple other studies that talk about how much concern there is about this year's presidential election, and it evidently is reaching pretty much all-time highs. Also saw a report out here that never married black women own 8 cents for every dollar held by a white man. I'm not going to go into detail on that one. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. Back. Don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9. Got questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks and have a great week.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.